Welcome to the Happy Baby Show, where you'll learn to understand everything you need to know about your baby and toddler's sleep, feeding, health and development, and most importantly, how they all work together for a happy, thriving babe and parents. I'm your host, Jen Butler, and I'm a maternal and child health nurse, certified breastfeeding and sleep consultant, a Circle Security facilitator, and a mama to three babes of my own. Join me as I explore all things early parenting in toddler-friendly, bite-sized episodes, because let's be honest, your toddler is probably smothering pseudo cream on the walls as we speak. Are you ready to feel confident in this wild ride of parenthood? Let's dive in. Now, before I dive into today's episode, I want to let you know that enrollment to my Happy Baby Code membership is open for the next 2 weeks. So that's until May 22nd, 2022. The Happy Baby Code membership offers you the on-demand, evidence-based lessons and expert support you need to confidently and intuitively navigate your baby or toddler's first 3 years of life. The membership combines access to an online portal filled with 100-plus evidence-based lessons that teaches you about all the sleep, feeding, health, and developmental changes you'll experience across your baby and toddler's first 3 years. And it pairs it with weekly expert sleep, feeding, health, and development support calls delivered by experts in these fields, as well as 24/7 access to a community of like-minded mums, plus a team of experts inside the community too. If this sounds like a great fit for your family and parenting vision, you can join us at www.jenniferbutler.online/thehappybabycode, all one word. Okay, let's dive into today's episode. Hello and welcome back to the Happy Baby Show. This is episode 107. Today, you're getting a snippet straight from inside the Happy Baby Code membership. So every single week, I run what is called the 10 in 10 weekly wrap-up, and all of the members get to submit their questions, and out of those questions, I go through in 10 minutes. Well, I do my best to do it in 10. 10 of the questions, and I answer those for the members, and you are going to get one of those 10 in 10s today, so I hope you enjoy. Welcome to this week's 10 in 10. So let's dive straight in. Question number one. At what age do you stop measuring the amount of milk a baby is drinking if formula feeding? Now, I may be misinterpreting this question, but arguably I would say you never necessarily have to measure the amount that your baby's drinking, because how much they drink is going to change at every single feed, every single day. I mean, in some cases, babies will often drink the same amount, but then there might be days when they drink less. It's just like you or I. Some days we eat more, some days we eat less. So, I mean, it's a good idea just to have a total overall understanding-ish of how much your baby's having. But as long as they're happy and settled and putting on weight, the volume that they're taking in is irrelevant. So, because it's going to change from baby to baby. If it helps you with just, you know, keeping in track and knowing how much they're having, you can just take note roughly how much they have at each bottle. But overall, it's just all about feeding to hunger. It's not about ticking off a certain amount of meals or making sure your baby has 200 meals like the tin says or wherever you're at. It's just about going by hunger. If they're putting on weight, wet nappies and happy, then feeding volume is actually irrelevant. Number two, how to resettle bub who wakes up and doesn't want to go back to sleep wanting to play at night. Any cot resettling tips when they are moving a lot and upset? Declan is 9 months. Thank you. So I think the biggest thing to look at here is, yes, resettling is obviously something that you want to be able to do. But more to the point, I would want to know why these really long periods of awake time are happening. Now, usually it's a routine misalignment somewhere where babies are either having too much sleep or they're waking potentially overtired. So that's one of the causes. There are some other things that are going on. Another one can be development. Or if they're uncomfortable or sick, things like that can obviously come into play. They tend to be transient, same with development. So doing a overall stock take, I guess, and a bit of an analysis on how much sleep Declan's having and making sure that it's aligned with what's appropriate for his age. So if you haven't already, make sure to check out the 9-month routine and even consider looking at the routine before 9 months and the routine after 9 months and see if starting to or like readjusting things helps with these extended long time, the nighttime wakes, because that's probably the biggest thing is that if he's having these extended nighttime wakes, if we can prevent them, that's the best thing. In terms of resettling, sometimes when our babies have these long wakes, it's fruitful, I think that's the right word, to try and resettle them. Often they just need to build up that sleep drive and pressure again. And so you actually say patting or all of the things isn't necessarily making sleep come sooner. That sleep drive just has to build. But if your baby's unhappy in you not being present, so if you leave the room, then a present settling is just what you need. So if just to be that presence and to keep bub happy, or even, you know, just a padding of the mattress or something like that. So I guess what I'm saying is that look at why these extended nighttime wakings are happening first, and then if it's a resettling thing where Declan doesn't want you to leave the room, I would try either responsive settling or present settling. Number three, when is the best time to transition baby from bassinet to cot? I would say it's at a time that suits you best. So in terms of SIDS and safe sleeping, the recommendation is that babies room share for the first 6 to 12 months. Now, for some people, they like to bring in the cot into their room to extend that. Otherwise, a huge thing for moving from the bassinet to the cot, a big trigger, is when your baby grows out of the bassinet. I know we had Georgie in the bassinet for as long as possible just because it was easy to have her in the room and close enough there for us to be able to settle or feed or whatever was going on. We initially started with the cot in our room, but that changed pretty quickly because she was all of a sudden really close and I just found I was listening and hearing and waking to all these unnecessary sounds. So we moved her into her room about 6 months from memory. So that would be the biggest thing when bub grows out of the bassinet or when you simply are ready for that change to happen. If bub's too noisy, if there's no, I'm going to talk about this point in a little bit, but there's no right or wrong age other than the fact that bringing in Sudi and safe sleep, it is recommended that baby is in the same room as you for the first 6 months. Number four, tips on how to work out which in-cot settling method works best for your babe. How long should you persevere with one technique? I really like this question because when you are doing something different than what you had been previously doing, trying it for a couple of minutes isn't going to be long enough to really test it. One of the best things that you can do is even consider trying one technique for a whole day for all naps, resettles, you know, bedtime, etc. And that can be hard, I can appreciate, because if your baby's crying, it's very hard to persevere with something. But one thing is that if your baby seems really agitated by something, then it's probably a sign that they aren't overly keen on that. But that's very different from a baby just crying at sleep. So if they seem really agitated, try something different. And bear in mind that some babies actually need space. They don't like a lot of the touching, hands-on settling methods, and we actually need to respect that. So to answer the question, I would say if you can try and be persistent, as long as they're not agitated, in one technique for a day before deciding, or at least half the day before deciding that it's worked or not, that would be my best tip. Number five. Is it possible to have a fast, forceful letdown without feeling it as a breastfeeding mum? I can't recall ever feeling a letdown. Absolutely. Not every woman will feel a letdown. And so for the women who do, you might feel like a tingling sensation, something like that. You can actually feel the milk leaving the breasts. But not every woman experiences that. But that doesn't mean that there's not milk transfer happening. You absolutely can still have a fast or forceful letdown. And that will be evidenced by your baby gulping, pulling off, windier, milk dripping, milk spraying, all those sorts of things. That's the signs of a fast and forceful letdown, despite feeling or not feeling your letdown. Number six, how do you get bedtime to be a long sleep time and not just a nap? Lennox is 5 months old and will only sleep for half an hour when he goes to bed. After that nap, he will have a little feed but won't go back to sleep until 8:30. Will then sleep until 4-ish, 4 a.m. or longer. I have tried different awake windows, shorter awake windows, later bedtime, earlier bedtime, etc. So my biggest tip here is that if you want bedtime to be 7 p.m., you need to make sure that the day starts around 7 p.m., so 7 a.m. I should say, so anywhere between 6 and 7 a.m. depending on when your baby wakes, because if you don't get up for the day until 8:30 or thereabouts, then bedtime is going to be that time too. So there's that part too. The other thing that you've got the option of doing, there's a lesson inside the portal on how to bring bedtime forward. With that lesson, you're going to learn how to incrementally bring that bedtime forward so that Lennox is recognizing that bedtime is actually at that 7 o'clock time. But you also have to make sure on the other end is that if he does wake, then you persist, like you don't bring him, like as soon as you bring a baby or a toddler out into the environment, that is going to wake them up. And then you are faced with having to serve like a whole awake period again. So staying in a dark room, being persistent with resettling at nighttime after this initial short sleep, that's going to be a part of it too. So you're sort of pulling all this information to be able to, you know, make sure that this isn't just, because I would actually say that it's almost like that nap's a false start. But definitely take into account, watch that lesson on how to bring bedtime forward, and pulling all these pieces together will help Lennox to start to recognize that time is bedtime and not a false start or a nap. Number 7, doesn't seem to have many awake windows in the day. I think there's a little bit missing there. We'll do one or two about 1.5. Okay, yes. So 4-week-old baby isn't doing many awake windows in the day. We'll do one or two of about 1.5 hours before 3 tired signs, usually first thing in the morning. And then last thing in the evening, 8 p.m.-ish. Otherwise, wakes hungry, then feeds back to sleep immediately. Should I be keeping her awake more in the day? She doesn't have any awake time during the night either. Definitely don't recommend awake time during the night. They don't, you know, it's feed and sleep at night time. So first things first, I'll talk about that. Now, these two are sort of, and these are both from the same mum, so they are very much connected. Now, I don't expect 4-week-olds to have a lot of awake time. However, what I want you to consider is how much day sleep your baby is getting. If you go inside the portal, there is a cheat sheet, a lesson in the introduction lesson of the Sleep Foundations that talks about how much overall 24-hour sleep your baby needs per 24 hours and roughly how much day sleep that looks like. If your baby is exceeding that, then that is going to lead into struggling to sleep at night, because there is still, even for a newborn baby, there's only so much sleep a baby or a toddler needs. And if your baby is sleeping all day, then that's going to lead to more wakefulness at night and difficulty in getting them to sleep at night. And this sounds like a real classic day and night reversal, which is also a lesson in the portal on day and night reversal. So whilst I don't expect really long awake times, if your baby feeds, make sure you're conscious of when milk transfer has finished. So once your baby has stopped swallowing milk, you might want to take bub off, and then that might mean that bub's more likely to have a small amount of awake time. Even just a small amount is going to help in reducing that overall daily sleep. Sleeping bub in a bright room, making sure they're exposed to sunlight, all of the things, that's going to be really helpful too. So that's all inside that lesson on how to reverse day and night reversal. So the second part from this mum is that bub is struggling to sleep in the bassinet at night, wants constant contact. I know this is normal, but it's impossible for nighttime sleep for me. Very challenging. I manage to settle to sleep in the bassinet, but she grunts a lot until I pick her up. Doesn't seem to progress to crying, but the grunting is so loud and accompanied by jerking that no one gets any sleep. Sometimes can get a few hours by bed sharing in very close proximity. Any tips on getting any amount of sleep without breaking all Sudi recommendations? So the question, the answer that I spoke about before, and even about Lennox in question number 6, is going to apply here too. So there's a little bit of a theme today. In that, in order to have earlier bedtime, and you know, for babies, young babies, newborns, to really recognize day from night, having a consistent start to the day that's earlier in the day. Doesn't have to be 7 for a newborn especially, but even if you start the day by 8, have a little bit more awake time, so bring a little bit more awake time into the day, do an overall stock take of how much sleep bub is having in day sleep, and then looking at whether or not that might be eating into the night sleep. these are all really important things to do when it comes to like even settling at night. The other thing to keep in mind is that newborns spend 50% of their time in light sleep. Now, this means that 50% of the night, they're going to be grunting, groaning, squirming, doing all of the things. At 4 months, that's what usually marks a 4 month sleep progression. That's when those sleep cycles change and they spend less time in light sleep. So until then, this is where parents are faced with the challenge of, do I have my really noisy newborn close to me? Because if your baby isn't actually waking and needing anything, those noises aren't noises that you need to be hearing. I, for one, had Georgie in our walk-in wardrobe. Her bassinet was like slotted in there. And then we had the door half closed. There was still plenty of circulation, all of the things. And it just stopped us from hearing every little noise, because you can't stop natural newborn sleep cycles. All you can do is try and have bub further away. And if that's not possible, if there is even a room really close by, I know that when I used to live in Melbourne with my first son, we basically had an office right off our room. And so Max was in there. He was basically like room sharing, but it was just like a door in between sort of thing. So that's what we had to do to manage. And I did the same thing with Ted sleeping in the walk-in wardrobe too. So that's what I'd recommend. Also making sure bub is warm enough, because babies who are cold squirm a lot more. So reviewing your environment and sleep lessons, checking out my guide for dressing your baby that's also in the environment and sleep lesson, and following that is going to help with any excessive squirming. Wind and stuff can cause squirming too. So even sort of making sure that bub isn't gulping, that you're burping before the end of the feed, anything that can potentially disrupt that digestive system. Number 9, 6-month-old pops himself to sleep independently, however, lately hasn't been having more than 3-hour blocks overnight. He's a cat napper. I try to resettle during the day, but he doesn't have a bar of it. He has anywhere between 3 to 4 naps depending on the day. One might be a contact nap. The awake window is roughly 2.5 hours. Anything I can do to encourage longer sleep? At 6 months, object permanence develops. And so if this is pretty recent, there's a chance that he is going through object permanence. And so there's a lesson inside the portal on what object permanence is. And then, you know, because object permanence is linked with separation anxiety, the biggest thing to look at is understanding that this can be a big cognitive milestone and might just cause a brief regression. But how you settle at those 3-hour blocks is going to determine whether or not that becomes more habitual. So I know babies that can fall asleep independently, but then they need to feed every hour and a half to 3 hours overnight. So they have more of a association with what happens at night versus what happens in the day. So looking at what you're doing to settle during that time, because chances are it could just be object permanence starting to occur. So definitely watch those lessons to understand what it's all about. And then it's up to you to go, okay, this is happening. This is hopefully just a transient period. What can I do to resettle in a way that isn't going to mean that even after this milestone has, you know, settled in and fully developed, that we haven't created that expectation that we have to go in and feed or go in and rock every 3 hours. That's where I would start. I think that it sounds like the fact that you're doing 3 to 4 day naps is, you know, with a catnapper, that is completely fine. You're defaulting to that catnapper routine, and around 6 months is when you'll start to see those sleeps consolidate. So I hope that's a good starting point. And of course, with all of these, you are welcome to follow up in any of the following 10 in 10s. And I'll see you within the community next week. I hope you enjoyed that little snippet from inside the Happy Baby Code membership, the 10 in 10 weekly wrap up that I do every single week for all of the members inside the membership. I'm excited to say that the enrollment period to the Happy Baby Code membership is currently open for the next fortnight. If you are listening live at the time of this podcast release, then for the next 2 weeks, you can actually join us inside the Happy Baby Code membership, where you get access to the 10 in 10 plus all the other incredible support that makes up the Happy Baby Code membership. So if you would love to learn more about what the membership offers and join us in the next fortnight while the registration and the enrollment is open, then make sure to head to www.jenniferbutler.online/the-HBC. Thank you for joining me today, and I will see you in the next episode.